You know, I think my family still thinks that this might be a scam or that there's some suspicious thing going on here. You know, all these amazing trips. I think they're in admiration and awe of the incredible things we get to see. But the number of times I get a family member who is deeply concerned that whatever we're doing is not above board, I'm like, I promise Travis has made an entire career out of this.
Welcome to Takeoff, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. I'm still Travis, and we're still on our summer break from new recordings. So for this episode, we asked you what we could answer for you. What pieces of information can we pull together from past episodes to answer your most pressing issues, like the blockers that you're facing in Points and Miles? And I'm going to be honest, what you asked for wasn't exactly what I thought we were going to get. A lot of the times it can seem that the technical side, you know, the nitty-gritty details, the how many points, which transfer partner, what card is the biggest blocker. But what we heard from you is that it's actually right now for many of you that more emotional side, less of the tactical and more of the what if I get this wrong? Am I gonna embarrass myself? Is this going to wreck my credit, or I don't know where to start? Should I save instead of spend points? And so that's what this episode is all about. It's about diving in, pulling those clips from the past where we've maybe touched on these topics, but without exactly diving into them specifically. So thank you everyone for sending your questions in, and I hope that this one gives you some of those less technical answers that you need to either get started or continue in your Points and Miles journey.
For years, I thought, like, the any second now, the other shoe will drop, or like any second now, you know.
Oh, there's a cop knocking at my door. I got to run.
Haha.
Yeah, I'm Bryce.
That this wasn't going to work or that some negative thing would come out of the credit card. So my grandfather worked in banking his entire career, and he even pulled Bryce aside and was like, you know, son, you can't, like, all opening all these credit cards, you know, those are, that's not good for you. You know, like, I just remember how different the idea of credit cards was. And so, oh yeah, for years and years, I was anxious about that.
The 10X Travel team is so incredible. And just listen to the podcast, learn about it, and maybe you'll open up to it. But, you know, here we are. I think we're always going to face that kind of skepticism.
The thing that Bryce told me that helped incredibly was, think of this as extreme couponing, because I love that show. I love that show on TLC, Extreme Couponers. And that clicked in my brain, something about that you think of this as extreme couponing. You're using coupons, you're stacking them together, you're figuring out this map, and it does take a lot of time and effort. That made me feel better. That put it into terms that I understood, I guess.
Everything started in the winter of 2011 at college. I went to Ohio State. It's cold in Ohio in the winter. And I was looking at making spring break plans with my friends. And I had virtually no money to my name. It's like, all right, I guess I'm going to spend spring break at home, like at my parents' house, senior year of college. That's going to be fun. And right as I was kind of giving up on making it happen, I realized that every single ad I saw across the entire internet was for airline credit cards. And those headlines looked pretty salacious given my situation. You know, things like 50,000 points for signing up, or two free flights, or free hotel rooms, and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, you know what? I'm like 22 years old. This is the time when you take like stupid risks, like short-sighted risks. Like, what is the worst thing that could happen if I just like sign up for a credit card and use these points to pay for spring break?
So I will go to jail.
Yeah. Well, I thought that might've been a possibility, but did I mention I was desperate? So I applied for one. I got approved right away. That was pretty shocking. And got the card, used it to pay for like textbooks or like room and board for the next quarter. That hit the spend, earned the flights. And then like, shockingly, like it actually was what it promised. You know, it feels like in today's age, it's like, I'm hoping to get maybe a half of a flight out of this, but ended up getting my two free flights and cashed them in to do spring break because it was two free flights instead of just one. Like, I can't just, you know, not redeem that. So I spent the first half of spring break in Florida, and I was like, why don't we tack on Vegas? So we flew from Florida to Vegas and then Vegas home. And like that made the difference in doing the trip, had a lot of fun. But then got back and was waiting for like the bad thing, right? The jail. I thought someone's going to knock on my door and just be like, yo, you can't do that. Like, it might be the cops. maybe the bank's upset with me. I'm sure my credit score is completely shot. And then kind of went through the checklist there. I was like, all right, check my credit score. It went up. Interesting. Started getting letters from that same bank offering me better credit cards. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Cops never came, at least for that. And just kind of had that natural thought of like, why wouldn't I do this again? Like, there's nothing bad that happened. A lot of places on this earth I want to go. So open up Google again and just, I think I searched something like open credit cards to earn points and save money on travel. And, you know, there weren't many websites doing this at the time, but that's when I found like Flyer Talk and like early, yes, like Reddit.
Yeah.
And a lot of like the online forums for this kind of strange little hobby. And I was like, oh, other people kind of do this too.
There's one thing here that Bryce said that I really want to highlight. You know, he went through the checklist, he checked his credit score, and it went up. I want you to let that sit with you for a second, because that's the second objection. It's the one where the internet has really done the most damage. There's a lot of misinformation out there about credit, and it can be hard to know what's right and what's wrong about credit, and especially whenever it comes to the impact that points and miles and opening credit cards has on it. Bryce has a hot take that he wasn't allowed to finish on the original episode, so we're going to give it to you now.
I think this is such a hot take that I'm going to present it as this is just fact that people misinterpret, right? I think most credit score advice that you read on the internet or hear from other people is misguided at best and oftentimes just entirely inaccurate. And time spent sourcing credit score advice from those sources is actually a net negative for most people.
Are you going to be able to do this one as a lightning round?
No, someone jump in with your next one before I just start ranting on this one.
All right, so you just heard Bryce, but he never got to do that rant that he wanted to. So let me do the short version of where I think he was going. Most credit score advice online is written for somebody trying to qualify for a mortgage in the next 90 days or a car loan, or someone who's trying to really improve their credit drastically. And the honest truth is, if that's you, this isn't genuinely the right time for you to be in the hobby, and you should wait. That's a real answer. And like, I'm not trying to talk you out of it. I'm trying to be sure that you get good advice. And that good advice is acknowledging that like when you utilize your credit matters, and utilizing it for different things sometimes means putting other things on pause. You know, the financial impact of a higher mortgage rate because of your credit being slightly lower is so significant that it's not worth it to pursue points and miles. And it's only a temporary break that you have to take anyways. But if that's not you, right, and you're not utilizing your credit for something else right now, a lot of the advice out there is answering a question that you weren't asking. And that's like the thing about credit, is we get so consumed sometimes with the score instead of understanding that that score is an asset for us to utilize, to deploy, to get more value. And typically that more value is done through lower interest rates on loans, whether it's a mortgage or a car loan or a personal loan, et cetera. But it can also be deployed to open credit cards if you don't need it for anything else. You can use it to open those credit cards to get rewards points. And that's how you can leverage it as an asset in those times when it may not have the same direct financial savings. You know, and the truth is that opening an account, when you do, it does put an inquiry on your report and it does lower your average age of accounts. These are two impacts that negatively impact your credit, but they're also two of the smaller factors that go into your credit score, and they fade, they get offset over time by the total available credit that you're adding, which is why the outcome that Bryce described, where your score actually goes up sometimes, isn't just some fluke. It's actually something pretty ordinary that we see once people get pretty deep into this hobby. Opening multiple cards and managing them actually kind of builds a more robust and resilient credit profile. For a lot of people who maybe only have one mortgage, you know, one or two car loans and one or two credit cards, it means you've only got five things there. So, you know, and three of those things, when they get paid off, they fall off of your credit report. That's why you hear people, why did my credit score go down when I paid off my mortgage? Because you lost that active account. It was probably one of your oldest accounts, so your average age went down as well. But by having more accounts, it means that those average ones that go into your credit score are more buffered. And so that's why it can actually be pretty typical sometimes for people to see their score once they're in this hobby for a while and open a few cards to stay flat or sometimes even go up whenever they open a new card. But the truth is, what we can't do is tell you exactly what will happen to your score in your case, because we don't know your file. We don't know all of the specific details. And like the factors that go into it are factors that we know and are aware of, but we don't know exactly how they calculate and rate that all the time. Nobody on the internet does, including the people who sound the most certain. And that's probably the actual hot take here. But that's kind of the credit rant in a nutshell. But it brings us to the objection we get more than any other. Not, is this safe? There's too much information and I don't really know where to start.
So much of the bank marketing around their cards is that their points are worth exactly this amount when you redeem them through the portal. They're not, you know, going to tell you that you can transfer them and get more value out of them. So a lot of people think that's how I use my points. I use them through the portal. They're worth the same amount every time. And so that's where this learning curve comes in, because your everyday person doesn't even know that option exists. And then you look at the transfer partner cheat sheet on our website and you get overwhelmed because you're like, wow, there's 27 airlines I could book. And then you start to spiral.
So I feel like I can already hear the voice of our common reader here thinking, wait a second, that's now three separate websites that you've mentioned just to kind of piece together the start of the search process. That sounds like a lot of work. Like, I'm overwhelmed. I have kind of like analysis paralysis. It's the term we hear all the time. So Morgan, I'd be curious what your advice would be to someone who approaches you in that scenario. Have you ever been asked that sort of question where someone says, how do I even begin to approach this with all these many different tools and strategies to think about and just kind of start fresh or start from the beginning?
I think basics are great. Don't make it too complicated. And in the analysis process, that there's really not too many bad decisions or mistakes of points are meant to be used. And maybe your first few redemptions won't be the greatest, but eventually they'll start becoming more comfortable. So you don't need all the fancy tools in order to search. I would just go back to the basics of know who your transfer partners are and then know how to search award fares on their websites and compare.
Seems simple. Yeah. Every time I start out to do it though, I'm like, it's simple. Yeah. It's simple. Okay. No, I'm emailing Morgan.
I like to organize Chase as kind of super beginner friendly. Amex would be more immediate and advanced, obviously, just because the transfer partners look so different than most people from a beginner standpoint would look to, just because there's so many different foreign programs that sound complicated. They're really not once you get the hang of it. So if you feel like you've kind of moved into that intermediate level and are looking to do some redemptions, Amex is a great option for moving into next, as well as Citi, Capital One, some of the other ones too.
Here's the thing that Morgan said like it was nothing. Your first few redemptions probably won't be the greatest. And that might be one of the most useful sentences in this entire episode. That's okay. Like, when you're doing points and miles, keep in mind why you're doing it. You're doing it to get free or significantly reduced costs of travel. I don't know anyone that got into this to try and maximize the cents per point that they're chasing. That's just naturally where some people tend to go with it. So it's okay if your first few redemptions won't be the greatest, and it's okay if any of your redemptions aren't the greatest. What makes it great is if you're getting the value from the points and miles that you set out when you started. And that kind of sets up our last objection, because once you really get past that fear and uncertainty and honestly the overanalysis, you can land somewhere new and you can just earn, burn, redeem, and enjoy the travel that you've been taken instead of just sitting on the pile hoping that you're going to maximize the value. I saw over in our 10x Travel Plus community recently someone asking about us to discuss on the podcast about how you keep doing this for so long. Is it actually possible? You know, and at this point, I've been doing it for about a decade. And yeah, it ebbs and flows. There are times when it's easier for me to earn, and there's times when it's harder for me to earn. But 10 years in, and it's still going strong. I just got a new card a couple days ago that I've been using on the trip that I'm currently on. So point is, it is possible. So should you be saving these for something really good, or should you just be earning and redeeming? Let's get into that.
Our last question for today is from Michael.
We are nearing 1 year in, have added 1.4 million points over this year, and so excited about that. Have maxed out on Chase, as they've rejected us a couple of times now. So we're wondering what the second year looks like for most people. What do you do differently in the second year? Does it involve getting rid of cards or doing other things differently? Looking forward to your answer.
Thanks for your question, Michael. Matt, if you can remember back to your birth during your second year of operating in Points and Miles, and you want to share what that was like for you.
I'm going to get into semantics on Michael's question. He mentioned they're 1 year in and have added 1.4 million points.
Ooh.
Awesome. Clapping for that. I'm hoping that he just forgot to mention in his question that they've also spent some of those points. Because if they have not redeemed those points, I'm actually going to say, don't get another card until you've redeemed some of your points. You know, people, yeah. We've talked about this before, but hoarding points is a dilemma in this country, in this world. And we need to, you know, make that a top priority on our platform on this podcast.
Yes.
So it's half sarcasm and half serious. I kind of want you to redeem some points before you keep adding more. Because in some regard, there's really no point in just building up points and not learning the fundamentals of how to use them and also getting to experience the benefits and the value that they provide for you.
How much weight do you give to devaluations when you're saying, like, hey, make sure to spend these? Like, is that something we're super worried about? You hear about it a lot. There's actually been some recently that people were pretty bummed about across different transfer partners. Is that something that, like, factors into your advice with, hey, these weren't made for you to just keep them in your pocket?
Yes, but flexible currencies help you to fight points inflation, let's call it like that, via devaluations. In more cases than not, there's other ways to book stuff via another transfer partner that might have escaped a devaluation. So for example, we recently saw British Airways Avios, that we talked about on a recent episode, devalue their partner award chart. So, you know, using them on American Airlines operated flights went up, let's call it 10 to 30%, depending on which band you're looking at. But guess what? Qatar Avios has not changed. Iberia ones, I believe, didn't change either. It gets confusing in that regard because it's the same program name, but different award charts now, to where you can still get kind of the same value. So if you've kept those points in Chase, Amex, Capital One, whatever, even though the British Airways ones devalued or cost more, however you want to look at it now, you still have options. So that's why we stress flexible currency so much, because you can get a bypass some of those devaluations. Not all the time. You know, if Hyatt devalues their award chart, then you're kind of SOL.
One way that I like to think about it in terms of hoarding points is that they're not worth anything until you spend them.
Bingo.
So it's not like money where, you know, it's worth something, but at any time they could just, you know, like you're talking about, devalue the points completely. If you're hoarding them for a huge trip that's, you know, 4, 5, 6 years away, by the time you get there and you want to spend them, the landscape could be totally different. So, I mean, obviously, if you have a bucket list trip, yes, save up for that. But take a couple in the meantime. Take some small, shorter trips. Get used to redeeming them and get comfortable transferring to different partners and that type of stuff. Because then by the time you get to your big trip that you're working up to, you'll be experienced and ready to go.
I will say, from kind of my experience in engaging with all of our readers over all this time, the situation you describe of kind of points hoarding often has like another layer to it that's, I would almost say, like psychological, where people are so hesitant to part with those hard-earned points because it just feels like they're kind of gone for a moment. Mm-hmm. Like you often hear like those phrases like, oh, I just love seeing like all those points, or I love kind of having those. And it's like the, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too. It's just so draining to, like, you earn all these points over all time because you're focusing on every nickel and dime that you're spending at the grocery store and what card to use. And you have hundreds of thousands in your account and you book something and then you see your account balance drop to like 40,000, and it just feels so draining.
So there you have it. Four of the most common objections that we've seen, and there's something that they all have in common, and I didn't really notice it until we cut this episode together. None of them is really about points. They're all about the instincts that we have around points. Isn't this a scam? Is about trusting something that sounds too good to be true in a world where too good to be true often is. oh, this hurt my credit. It's about protecting something that you built and maybe have spent a long time building or rebuilding. There's too much to learn. It's about not wanting to make mistakes or look foolish. And shouldn't I save these? It's about not wanting to waste something of value that you worked for. And here's the thing, right? These are all reasonable instincts to have. They're honestly the same instincts that kind of make people good with money in the first place. The problem is that every one of them pointed at this hobby tells you to do nothing. And doing nothing has a cost that never shows up on a statement. So if you take one thing from today, take Emily's because it's the shortest. They're not worth anything until you spend them. Your points aren't worth anything until you spend them. So once again, thank you to everyone in the group who sent in a question, including some of those in our new 10X Travel Plus community. Got to answer at least one of those on today's episode. We got a lot more questions than we could fit. And honestly, some of the best ones were too specific for a compilation episode. So we're holding those back for whenever we're back to recording live. 2 weeks from today, we've got one of these. And it's the one I'm the most interested in because there's a problem almost everyone listening has right now. And nobody has named for you. Your points are scattered across 4 or 5 different cartoon programs. And if I asked you what they're worth altogether, you couldn't tell me. That's not a knowledge gap. That's a completely different kind of problem, and it has an actual solution. So until then, you'll just have to tune in next time to hear that, what that answer is.